Hey guys, Mark Potter here. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. Please remember that in today's world, custom content is the way to engage. It's the way to build community. So reach out to us at www.conduit-inc.com. Guys, I have a real treat for you because I've invited back our good friend Amy K. Hutchins. I wanted to check in with her and talk to her a little bit about how it's going around her Power of Profitable Conversations. She has unleashed this program, and I figured I'd check in with her and see how it's going and if she, in fact, has learned anything. And this conversation is maybe one of our best. I know I've had her on here a couple times. I'm clearly enamored with her thought process, and I thought that you guys would get a kick out of hearing some of the stories that she's come across with her coaching. And it's really, really apparent that this whole idea around our lives being defined by the conversations that we have is critical. And I really found it compelling when she talks about our life is better on the other side of these conversations. You know, we shy away from these conversations. We shy away from conflict. And yet, Amy K. reminds us that if you bring some structure to it, if you step back and think about how you're going to address a tough conversation or even a tough sell, that you shouldn't shy away from it. We shouldn't let the fear get us. We should realize that there's pleasure on the other side if we constructively go at it. So a great conversation. Can't thank her enough for being a part of this. And without further ado, have a listen to my conversation with Amy K. Hutchins. All right, let me welcome my good friend, Amy K. Hutchins, again. She's got her hands wrapped around her coffee mug early in the morning on the West Coast. How are you, Amy K.?
I am fantabulous, and I'm about halfway through my cup of coffee, so I have a feeling that we'll be totally ramped up here shortly.
You're a champ. This must be a secret that leaders keep. They get up early, and they get going.
Yeah, and you know what? It isn't so secret. It's finding your time, and my time is in the morning. So this is, I really don't get any kudos for this. I would rather do this than 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's all good.
You're a champ. I can't believe the energy. I'm like sleep deprived with these, you know, I get these kids. My weekends, weekends are supposed to be for relaxation, but I'm going to have to start getting up at the crack of dawn like you and get it done.
Well, you're probably one of those parents that's doing what most of them are doing. You're driving, you know, here, there, and everywhere just to keep all the sports and the activities going.
Yeah, it's like a full-time job. So, you know, and you sit there and you think, God, I can't wait till they're out of the house. And then you think, well, that's not true. I'll miss it. So, but listen, so I wanted to do this because we've had a couple really robust podcast conversations before. And, you know, I got some really nice feedback off of it. And, you know, not just your high energy, but your insight and your thoughts. And I think that the world is kind of craving some of this. And the last time we talked a little bit about the Power of Profitable Conversations and this whole program that you're launching. And I reached back out because I thought, you know, I want to flip the script. I want to know what Amy K. is learning from these as you dive into it. I know it's still early in the program, and we can get to some of the details, but I know you have some interesting stories and connections that you've made, and I thought, well, let's. I think there's lessons in that. So if you're okay with that, I really just want to ask the open-ended question. You know, what have you learned thus far?
Yeah, several things. I mean, I think that's probably one of the cool things about what it is that I do is that the more that I work with people, you know, it's a win-win both ways. So I'm coaching them on how to have conversations, but then I'm learning about what they're really dealing with. Right. And so it's helping me to sort of keep my finger on the pulse of how hard it is.
Yeah.
And that's That's one of the things that I think that I'm learning too, is that creating a safe space for people to come and be vulnerable. And vulnerable isn't, I just want to be really clear. When I say vulnerable, I'm not talking like therapy couch and Kleenex and, you know, and tears. I'm talking about just the vulnerability of being able to say, I'm stuck, or I really don't know how to approach this conversation, and the courage that it takes to say that.
Right.
And so we've created a safe space in the program, which I didn't think, and I'm just being totally transparent. You know my personality. I'll answer whatever. But I didn't think these calls were going to be all that. Like, I only did one a month in this first launch because I was like, we'll see how it goes. People may or may not show up. People may or may not want to ask questions. So we'll just do one a month. Well, holy cow, Mark. People are showing up, and they are like, okay, here's what I got. And it's like, we have multiple hot seats. We call them hot seats. But the cool thing is that while let's say you're in the hot seat, you're asking me your question, how do you deal with this? And I'll get specific in a second. But what's so fabulous is it's applicable to everybody. I mean, you are not the only one that's dealing with an underperformer or a sales guy or gal that's not pulling their weight or having to draw a boundary or like telling the sister-in-law she can't get everything, you know, in mom and dad's estate. It's like, right. It's like these crazy conversations. And yet what's fun for me is I can't prep. It's like we're in real time. We go live. People call in and they're like, okay, here's my dealio. And I'm like, okay, game on. And so in the moment, it's fun. It's an adrenaline rush. But then here's the cool thing. It's real. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I'm loving about it, is that there's no script. There's no, oh, we can this. And so we had one guy write in, again, just being transparent. We had one guy write in ahead of time about people playing the blame game. And so we had this fascinating conversation about blame versus accepting responsibility. And that I was thrilled that I could do a little prep for. Mm-hmm. But the rest are all just like in real time. And I'm probably going on way too long in a response to you, but I've learned that when you can create a safe space for people to learn, they will bring it.
Do you feel like it's fascinating. So maybe the major learning there is that we live in a world that is we're so cocooned by technology that there's maybe I don't want to make this a, like you said, the Kleenex and tears and the couch, but there is maybe a cry for help that people need people. People need somebody to lean on and be able to share some of that. 'Cause it's kind of, we live in this antiseptic world, I fear, and it's interesting to hear you talk about the blame game, because I was just having this conversation with someone the other day about being in the corporate environment and the world of fearing mistakes and sticking your neck out and how could you ever be vulnerable? I mean, unfortunately, we live in a world where, gosh, I could never go to the manager with my concerns or share some of that. I don't want to look weak. And so, and at some level, you know, maybe you're giving, I mean, maybe there's a much more dramatic need than we thought. Are you feeling that?
Well, totally. And I think that one of the things that we, and this is just the reality of life, we say that it's safe. We tell people in our cultures in corporate America that, you know, we want trust as a part of our, you know, our inherent core values. And then we undermine it. It becomes where, you know, you end up talking to me, and then I go and I undermine you, and I share it with so-and-so, and I didn't really have permission to do that. And so what happens is human behaviors rear up, and you realize it isn't such a safe place. And so I think that's what's kind of cool about what we've created, is there is no hidden agenda on these calls except to help you. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up, like, this is a great example that I think would be applicable to everybody listening today is, think about the preventative conversations that we don't have. And just taking 2 minutes to think about the conversation that if we had it, would prevent stress down the line. So like a perfect example at home is, I have a dear friend, Susan, and she always talks about setting expectations before the children like melt down, before the children have a bad reaction. And so her great example the other day was, she said that the kids had chores that they had to do, but they really wanted to watch this television show. Mm-hmm. So she said, before we even turned on the TV, I said, okay, here's what's going to happen. when the show is over, I'm going to turn off the TV and you are both going to look at me and you're going to say, thank you, mommy, for letting us watch the show. And then we're all going to get up and we're going to go like put the dishes away or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But she was setting an expectation of this is how it's going to roll in 30 minutes. And right. She said, by golly, because they got what they wanted. They knew what was going to happen. They felt in control. Like it was a win-win for everybody. And then now fast forward 30 years in business, we talk about the blame game. And I said to this gentleman, you need to have a preventative conversation. And he's like, what do you mean? And so I gave him the kid example, which is really concrete. And then I said, now you need to pull your people together when there's nothing to blame, when there's nothing going wrong. And you need to talk about the fact that responsibility is about assigning people to manage, serve, and protect certain outcomes. It doesn't mean that if things go wrong, that it's their fault. I said, but taking responsibility is about assigning people the ability to manage and protect and serve. I said, blame is about a verdict. Somebody's wrong. Mm-hmm. And we're judging them for being wrong. And I said, so if you can have the conversation with your people, what's the difference about accepting assignment versus passing a verdict? Then you can have much more responsible people down the road who say, look, I'm not at fault, but I accept the fact that it's my job to manage, protect it, and serve it, so let's fix it.
Right.
And so people get much more willing to stick their neck out to say, okay, I'm accepting assignment of this versus I'm in trouble. And he's like, oh my God, he's like, that's a total mind like melt. And I said, it is, but that's why you have the conversation ahead of time. Because now you can have, you know, better results down the road.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting because I always, it is, communication is at the core of everything. You know, it's ironic that this guy, you know, was talking to you about blame because, and you're saying if you had communicated up front, and set, like you said, set the expectations, it's probably not going to eliminate all blame. I mean, we live in a bit of a culture of blame. But,
right.
You know, this communication is at the heart of just about everything. And any issue, especially in business, but you know, you something went wrong and maybe someone miscommunicated or it was misunderstood or, part of this profitable conversations is also kind of the timing and having it up front, being able to say to set expectations, and that's tough. I mean, that's a mindset that they need to embrace, right?
Yes, and of course, you know, everybody's excuse is, oh, I don't have time for this nonsense. Oh, I don't have time for this, and it's sort of like, well, do you have time for a 5-minute conversation now? Or do you have time for the 3-hour, excuse my French, shit show that happens 3 months down the road because you didn't have this conversation,
right?
You know, and all the stuff that you have to deal with. And it's kind of like the way that I look at it is just a really practical tool. Think about the fact that every single time you start a conversation, you are creating a framework for how everybody's going to react and then respond. So like another example that we had on one of these calls was somebody got on the line and he was like, well, I've got a really underperforming sales guy. And he's like, I don't even like know how to start the conversation. I don't want to fire him. You know, he's a really good guy. He lives and breathes our culture, but for some reason we just can't turn it around. And he's like, I just don't even know how to start the conversation. And I said, well, let's role play. Let me be the sales guy. How would you start it? And he's like, okay, dude, we need to talk. I'm like, okay, dead on arrival. Like, let's go back. I was like, don't want to start a conversation with dude. We need to talk. But I said, you want to make him successful. And he was like, I know. And I was like, okay, so your very first question is, what are 3 things we could do this quarter to make you a more successful integrated team player? And he was like, dang. And I was like, so let's just start with that. I, as a performer or an underperformer, I don't want to hear that my sales are down. By the way, sales are down is not the problem. That's a byproduct of something else not working, right? It's never the core of, you know, it's not the source of what's going wrong. It's just a result. So I said, let's not talk about that. Let's not do head spins. Let's not do blame games. Also, we don't want to threaten somebody. We don't want them to be on the defensive the moment that the conversation starts. So if I literally said, okay, dude, let's talk about 3 things we can do in this specific quarter to make you more successful, to make you a more integrated team player, now that's a conversation everybody wants to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a non-threatening way to start. Now, you might have some ideas, he might have some ideas, and then you can role model, you could shadow, you could do all kinds of things to make him more successful. But already, what are we saying? We're in this. Like, we want you to be successful. And that's a different way to start a conversation.
Yeah. You know, it dawns on me that we live in this world that, going back to this idea that we're cocooned, if you will, and the personal connection, personal interaction is less. I mean, we can hide behind these tools technically.
Yeah.
And as I listen to you, I think to myself, God, we already probably want to avoid conflict in the first place. You know, nobody, there's not too many people that enjoy conflict. And so my thought is that because of where we're at in this world, that there's probably more of that. I mean, I know I'm uncomfortable with it. I struggle. I want everybody to be happy. I'm what I would consider a soft-hearted guy. But there are times when I probably have to have some tough conversations, and I worry about those conversations. But I potentially need to step back and get structure to them and say, well, wait a minute. Like, to think that I'm that guy. Like, I'd be the guy to say, hey, dude, we need to talk. Right. And, you know, that is, and for you to just sit there and go, oh, no. Actually step back and go, what are the three things that we can do to accelerate your sales right now? I mean, fantastic. But people don't really step back. And what you're saying is, before you engage in that, I understand it's going to be tough. I understand conflict is not, you know, everybody's on everybody's wish list, but maybe you can manage that through some structure to your conversations, right?
Yeah, and I think you've kind of nailed it, that conflict's not going to go away. I mean, there's so many layers here I want to unpack. So one of the things that I think that's really important for us to realize is that tough conversations are attempted and avoided every single day. Like, that's just, that is just the real world. Like, there are tough conversations that we're all either trying to have or we're just completely avoiding. And yet I live under the premise of the life that we desire, the life that we want is on the other side of that tough conversation. And I really believe that. Mm-hmm. And so, the quality of your life is a direct reflection of the quality of your conversations. And so if you break that down, if you can take a tough conversation and successfully navigate it and turn it into a highly profitable one, you are now getting the life that you desire. Mm-hmm. And yet, so many of us avoid these conversations because we don't really know how to have it. And so we're not scared of the conflict. What we're actually scared of is not getting through that conversation successfully and making things worse. That's actually the deep-seated root that prevents us from having these conversations, is we believe that if we have this conversation and it goes sideways, we're going to make things worse instead of better.
Right.
And so it's kind of like, if you can step back and say, okay, well then, what would I do to actually get through it? Or how might I get through it to create a successful outcome, to get the life that I want on the other side? Now you've got all this fodder for getting through it successfully, and you've got the skills, you got the competence, you got the confidence. And so one of the things that I tell people is that when you have conflict, the very first thing that you need to do is not do a power play, but do a connection play. See if you can find a place to connect, find empathy, lean in to understand, because the minute that people feel like they are less on the defensive, the more likely the conversation is going to go well.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm frantically taking notes again. And it's funny, I got to tell you, I've been using, part of why I wanted to reach back out is because I've been trying to talk, I talk to my kids and as they go through stuff, whether it's social or athletic or academic, whatever. And I think it was you that said to me, we are not our reactions. We're not our emotions.
Right.
We're it's fair and it's okay to have those. But what defines us is our response. And
correct.
And so to step back and I've said, yeah, it's completely okay for you to feel that emotion, right? take a beat and respond the right way. And that goes to what you just said, is that, you know, changing your mindset. I mean, it's almost like we'll do more to avoid pain than gain pleasure. And you're kind of saying, hey, there's pleasure on the other side of that difficulty, right? You know, let us get through this conversation and so have some structure to it and embrace that. But while you're doing it, realize that I love that what you said is that the life we want is on the other side of that. And that's a huge deal. Let me ask you specifically, because, you know, I have a lot of readers and listeners that are in the sales world, and I live the same thing. I have the same challenge. So maybe I'm just calling. Maybe this podcast is just for me. I don't know. But
it would be for you, and then everybody who's listening, because we're all dealing with the same stuff.
That's right. And so selling is hard, you know. And so that what resonated. That's why I bring up this question is when you said that, I thought, gosh, you know, there's so many people that are bashful about it. They actually are in the role, but they're so bashful because they don't want to, it's not conflict, but they don't want to offend, you know, they don't want to be pushy, you know, and so they don't want to be rejected, right? That's kind of that, right. They're fearing that, you know. What would be your advice to the sellers out there? And have you come across some of these people in your coaching conversations?
Oh, totally. So there's a ton of stuff, by the way. We do a lot in sales inside the program. And so I'll give you a few just gems today, but we have a ton inside the program. But a lot of it is thinking about, first of all, the mindset that you go into. So I'll just give you a couple gems really quick that I have found very helpful, from mindset to actual conversation tools. So in the mindset, somebody said the other day, you know, what do you do with objections? What do you do? I'm so sick of objections. But I said, well, here's a couple things you need to know. If somebody is giving you an objection, you got to look at it as an opening to close. And I'm serious. So if I'm giving you an objection mark, this is an opening for you to close me. And here's why. If I really wasn't interested, if there wasn't a part of me that wanted to do some level of business with you, I wouldn't be objecting. I would be walking away, or I wouldn't be responding to your email, or I would be ignoring you or dismissing you. The fact that I am taking the time to object means that I'm still engaged in this conversation and I'm still processing the information, because I haven't made a full, you know, full decision yet of saying yes or no, which means you've got wiggle room. And so one of the first things I tell salespeople is that if somebody's giving you an objection, take it as an awesome Hail Mary for you to catch, because they are not done with you yet. Mm-hmm. And so that's, to me, that's like this fabulous mind, because a lot of times people will walk in and they'll be like, oh my God, objection, objection, objection. I'm so sick of this. They're not really interested. They're pushing back. And it's like, no, if they're pushing back, they're still engaged. So take it as wiggle room. Take it as permission to continue to, you know, talk to them. And then the next thing that you do is you quit talking about your features and benefits. This drives me crazy. I cannot tell you how many people over the years I've shadowed in sales where they do the show up and throw up.
Yep.
It's just like, as a salesperson, you need to be asking more questions. And so one of the things that we've all heard, and I find this a fun kind of jujitsu trick, is the old way, the old school way was, you know, what keeps you up at night? All that cheesy, let me feel your pain points, right?
Right.
There's a much more sophisticated way to do it, and it's what happens when. So it's kind of like, what happens when you miss your printing deadline? What happens when you run out of storage space? What happens when you know, the customer service person doesn't respond beautifully? You take whatever it is that you're selling, whatever solution it is that you're providing, and you ask them, because you know what it is that you're about to solve, you ask them the pain point. So for instance, if you just bought like a golf club that doesn't actually like get you the right angle, you know, then I'll say, well, what happens when, you know, your shot's always a little to the left? Or what happens when, you know, your grip's a little too unsteady or whatever? And I'm like, oh, well then, you know, if you find that frustrating or whatever, let's solve that together. Or I don't want that to happen to you either. And then you have a chance to share what it is that you're offering. But the what happens when, and here's why it's such a great phrase for salespeople. The person tells you their pain themselves, but they're doing it in a non-threatening way. What they're doing is they're revealing, they're kind of like opening the kimono a little bit to what their world is like when it's not perfect or when it's not going well. But they're not doing it from a, hey, you know, I'm here to tell you, or I hear that, you know, you're dealing with all this pain. And then people get defensive. They're like, no, I'm fine. So when you just say, hey, well, what happens when this goes down? They're just revealing information without you making them look bad.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember, you know, a long time ago, I walked into a place and I just said, you know, tell me how you make money, and how does, you know, you start asking questions. I mean, there's a curiosity. I remember it was one of my greatest sales, or ultimately, I had probably just kind of let go of my wallet, I suppose. And you know, I asked the questions about, I guess I was just a genuinely curious. And I look back at that conversation and I go, gosh, you know, I probably tapped into it. Now, there's been other times when maybe I haven't, I got a call. I swear to you, you know, obviously we do, you know, a variety of magazines, custom content. And I got a call from a print salesperson the other day, left me a voicemail, then sent me an email, and the voicemail was essentially telling me that they have wonderful pricing and that they have, you know, high quality printing. And this is, you know, it's a true story. And he said, I really, really would love for you to give us a chance to quote you some pricing. And then he said, I'll send you some information. And so he sends us an email. I thought to myself, boy, do you read the magazine? This is completely, I don't even know who you are. You know, you're asking me for a date and I don't even know who you are. And so
yeah.
It's still, and it's almost surprising to me, but we still have that. We still have that conditioned, and it's, that's not a profitable conversation. It's not even a conversation, you know? So
no, it's not. And it's no different than like the emails that you see. And I'm sure your listeners are way more sophisticated than this, but I cannot tell you the number of emails that I get that some stranger will reach out and be like, hey, you know, I hope you're having a good day. Don't really want to take much of your time. I'm thinking, why are you even bothering writing this email? Like, I can't even get past the first line because I know exactly where this is going. And it's like, delete. And even on LinkedIn, you know, you'll get it now. There's this whole thing of direct messaging where people will reach out and they'll be like, hey, I really thought you'd like this article. And I'm like, guys, oh my gosh, are we going backwards? We're going backwards. This article is just a way for you to get your foot in the door. And it's like, this is not, we are all too sophisticated for this now.
Yeah. I wonder if people, you know, we all procrastinate. We all, and again, it goes back to this whole idea of, you know, the life we want is on the other side of that conversation. And you know, we are addicted. We talk about the technical part. We also are very addicted to immediate gratification. We've got the boss in the corner office that wants us to, you know, make sure that we're, you know, sales are pumping out. And so they all want to have an ROI. And yet I wonder if there's this mindset out there that because of that, it actually ends up taking longer. Now, had we just stepped back and said, you know what, let's be patient and have real conversations, maybe it would happen quicker. Because I feel like when you're throwing money at something, or you're saying, hey, I just did that ad, or I just did that, what's the ROI? Did I get the sale coming back? You know, that's never going to happen. It's like this guy who's probably somewhat desperate for sales. And his mindset is, I'm going to pick up the phone. And I had the same conversation with a guy a few years back. And he got through to me, and I said, well, do you read the magazine? And Canvas, the magazine, is all about sales, marketing, and you know, a deeper understanding, if you will. And he says, well, I can't say that I have. And I said, well, you've been to the website. Well, no, not, I haven't been to the website. I thought, seriously? I mean, you should read the magazine, and I hung up. So, but I do feel like there's this addiction to immediate gratification that's also hindering or slowing us down to have these kind of conversations. Like, they think, oh, I can't get to know somebody, it's going to take too long. I mean, do you feel that at all?
I do. And you see that a lot of the sort of this impatient desperation. And one of the things that I think that's really important for us to remind ourselves is that we come into a conversation with a certain energy. And I'm not being woo-woo. I'm a science girl. You know, science all the way through undergrad and grad. but we literally do radiate a certain energy and people pick up on it. It's no different than picking up on the desperate phone call where somebody's, you can just see that like they're starving. Nobody wants to buy from the starving person. Nobody wants to buy from the desperate salesperson. And so I think that for us to come in, just relax, to be like, there's nothing about this conversation except to create connection and understanding. Mm-hmm. I'm not pitching you. I'm not pitching. And that's a big difference. Like in our sales training, I'll say it is not about your elevator pitch. It is about your elevator connect. It is not about your pitch presentation. It is about your connect presentation. And so we were literally in a think tank. I was up in Seattle last week. It's a new story. And I was working in a company, insurance and benefits, and this woman said she was putting her sales deck together. And I said, okay, great. And like, what are you doing? She's like, well, here's all my features and here's all my benefits. And I was like, okay, I have to respectfully tell you that ain't going to sell you squat.
Mm-hmm.
And she just looked at me like you could have heard a pin drop in the room. And I said, you have got to start asking, what are these people going to resist? What are they going to judge? What are they going to be attached to? And your presentation should be all about meeting them where they're at. What are they resisting? Well, help them come over their resistance. What are they going to be judging? Help them to have a new perspective and a new mindset where they walk out of the room and like, dang, I never thought about it that way before. What are they going to be attached to? Meaning, what are you going to have to help them let go of in order to step into the new way successfully? And I said, that is about stories and examples and connection. That is not about your features and benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, there should be no slide in your sales deck that has more than 7 words on it. And she's like, duh. And I was like, no, this is beautiful. It's like, this is perfect timing, because now think about all the ways that you can innovate this presentation to go in and say, I have one goal, and that is to connect and make them feel like we understand them the way that nobody else has understood them, and we've changed up their thinking. And so like one whole sales video that we do, and it's a great sales tool, by the way, and it's going to be free. So this is not a pitch from me. Our website's going to be completely redone in a few weeks, and this is going to be one of the free sales tools that we give away. But it's really 8 magical words. And the 8 magical words is that when your prospect can say, I never thought of it that way before, you are about to close a deal.
Mm.
And it's like just this brilliant of, it's like, it's no different, Mark, than if I pick up your magazine and I read an intriguing article, I'm like, dang, never thought of it that way before. I'm hooked. And
right.
The reason that I'm hooked is because I'm so thrilled that somebody's teaching me something new.
Right. Let me ask you, before I let you go, I want to ask you, and I still want to get to some you reminding the listeners of the details of the program, but one big thing, and this actually goes both actually professionally and personally, and that is, you know, even getting to the conversation is hard. And mm-hmm. You know, there are so many people that are so busy. And ultimately, you know, I contend that there's a lot of people that are busy, but they're not, you know, I'm not sure how much progress they're making, meaning they're keeping themselves busy because, you know, it looks good to the man, if you will. But let's face it, there's a busyness about people and they don't even want to have the conversation. So that's a challenge. But even on a personal level, you know, your teenage kid doesn't want to have the conversation. And, you know, you're trying to connect with him or her and just say, look, I just want to get an understanding, and they roll their eyes. And part of that is, you know, especially in a 15-year-old boy, the frontal lobe is not fully developed. It's actually never fully developed in the male, by the way. But anyways.
That's a whole different conversation requiring tequila, but go ahead.
But you know what I'm saying is, so it's one thing to get there when you're there and say, okay, now I got to buck up and use some of these processes to ask the right questions and have the right conversation. But getting there is tough too. And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I'm the first though. I was raised with brothers. I have a really awesome dad. I have very healthy. I mean, I think that it's fair to say that both boys and girls, they don't have a prefrontal lobe that's developed until, you know, 21, 22. And I think that when we talk about teenagers specifically, you have to find those golden moments. And those golden moments usually are unexpected. Again, it's not the desperate. So if we take sales to our teenagers, you can't force the desperate conversation. Yes, there are times you need to have conversations, but they'll come at opportune moments. You'll either be in the car, you'll have a conversation around the dinner table. They're typically those moments when you're like, oh, I was sort of least expecting this to happen, but now it's happening. And as a parent, you have to lean into it. And you have to recognize that if you don't have that conversation now that your teenager is ready or there's a moment, you will miss it because you can't force it later. Mm-hmm. Now, are there times when you have to just sit down and have a tough conversation with your kid? Of course, it's called parenting. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those golden moments are unexpected. So a great example is last night, one of the kids ended up going to babysit, but we sat there with a 15-year-old last night, and she clearly wanted to talk. And it was like, okay, like, I was just getting up to like go do the dishes, and she's like asked this question. I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm just gonna sit back down. And because you don't know when it's gonna come, you just don't. Mm-hmm. And when it arrives on your doorstep, I think as a parent, one of the things that we have to say is, if I don't make time for this now, there never will be time for this conversation. Mm-hmm. And clearly they're ready, so I have to embrace it. And that's kind of a willingness to set our own selfish agenda aside. And it's no different at the workplace. You know, sometimes somebody will walk into your office and they'll be like, hey, can I just talk to you about this? And you're sitting there looking at your schedule and you've got 40,000 things in your top five to-do list.
Right.
But somebody just asked you for help.
Right.
And when somebody asks you for help, that's a golden moment at the workplace. And the reason that I say that is because the only thing that breeds trust in the workplace is that it is safe to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And when it is safe to ask for help and somebody's actually asking, you don't dismiss it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about, what are the opportune moments on the sales side? So, because I think the analogy is great, right? It says with the kids, that the kids offer, I mean, obviously that's important, but it also is a great analogy to business. And you're talking about, look, there are times when you just have to have the conversation, but other times it's almost like you have to be patient. You have to resist that, what you want, and kind of, like you said, lean into it and let them come to you and make sure that you're aware enough to take that opportunity. In business, though, sometimes we force it too, right? It's the parent that's you're badgering the kid and say, listen, I want to talk to you about this. Well, I'm not, I don't want to talk about it, mom, dad. But in business, we try to force it too. And
we do.
You know?
And I think there's a couple things that we need to remember too, though, is that, and I think I might have even said this in the last podcast. So we are not the hero. So when it comes to sales, I think this is really, really important. We are not the hero. The customer is the hero. And everybody, I use the recent example because everybody gets it, the Hunger Games, you know. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to be Katniss Everdeen. Everybody wants to be the hero. In sales, you are not Katniss. You are Hamish. You are the wise guy. You've been through it. You're the mentor. You're the one that's got some of the answers to make them like think differently. And so one of the things that makes us less desperate is, and it sounds cheesy, but it isn't. It's not. It's actually the opposite. When you are constantly in front of people in a non-sales situation, you become their go-to person in a sales situation. And what I mean by that is you have to have something that stays top of mind. Like you've got the magazine. Mm-hmm. The magazine comes out regularly. That keeps you top of mind without sounding desperate, without forcing yourself into a conversation with somebody. You're there, and you're just a constant reminder. We have Amy Kayisms. Amy Kayisms go out every month. They're like short little videos. It's just a top of mind. It's a drip campaign. But then, and here's kind of the fun thing. Now, it sounds a little forced, but it's a different conversation. When was the last time you picked up the phone with one of your customers and instead of saying, what can I get you? What do you need? You know, we got this new product, thought you might be interested in. You just had a conversation that said, you know, I'm checking in to see where you're going to make sure that I'm aware of like where you're headed in the next 18 months. So some beautiful questions are like, what are the strengths of our partnership and what's working right now for you? And where are you going in the next 18 months? And what's the benefit when you get there? Well, then what are some of your concerns about getting there? Well, then based on some of those concerns, here's some things I'm going to do in the background to just continue to add value and support you on this journey with you. That's a conversation very few people are having.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think it's great. I think it's great stuff. I gotta, you know, I gotta get my Amy Kay fix, you know, on a monthly basis. But speaking of that, so let's wrap up by you reminding people about this program, The Power of Profitable Conversations, because that is where they can get their Amy Kay fix. And I, you know, like I said, I just think I wouldn't do this if I, you know, I'm not a a promoter. If I didn't think that you know, you've kind of touched me in some way and it hit a nerve, and I think it's really, really great. Look, I do it for a living. I mean, the publishing process, we ask questions and we do it in a non-threatening, non-selling way, and it works. And so you're presenting something that allows people to have that conversation every day and take them to another level, and it is truly you know, creating profit out of having these conversations. So I that's why I wanted to get together and talk a little bit more about, you know, what you've learned. But give us a reminder of how they can find this and a little bit of the details of The Power of Profitable Conversations.
Yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things I would say is, you know, just imagine feeling in control and energized despite the chaos and complexity of, like, attempting to scale your business. Or imagine feeling calm and confident and connected despite the mental mind suck of feeling like you're not moving fast enough, you're not doing enough, and you don't know enough. Like, if you really want to, like, wake up every day and be like, your first thought is, you know, dang, Mark, I got this. I totally got this. Despite the never-ending stressors of our demanding business and our hectic personal life, then this is a program that I would say that you should check out. And it's really easy to find. It's amyk.com/PPC for The Power of Profitable Conversations. But really and truly, we have a ton of information on that site to really walk through and find out if this is for you. Like, if you know, if you're ever looking around and wondering why it seems like others have it so easier than you, or you simply find yourself frustrated and puzzled because you don't know how to have some of these tough conversations, you know, check out amyk.com/PPC because we're here for you. I mean, it's a robust program. It's not five videos. We will have over 50 videos and playbooks and coaching calls. I mean, it's a robust program to really get what you want.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's fantastic. I think you are. I will be out that way in April. And you know, I know you're crazy busy, but if we're if we've got the chance to you know, get together, grab a cocktail, and solve the world's troubles, then we're going to do it. So I'll let you know what my itinerary is. But you know, as always, I, you know, and a reminder to the listeners, you know, we are Amy Kay has been gracious enough to write columns for us in Canvas, and you'll see her advertisements in there for the program. And like I said, I am not someone that has ever really done this, and I just I don't know. I just believe in it passionately because it is, you know, it kind of jives with what we've been talking about for the last 12 years. So, you know, I can't thank you enough again. And I know you got to go warm up that coffee, and hopefully the sun starting to rise.
No, it's not up yet.
Oh, my
it's
gosh.
Okay. It'll be here soon. It's good. It's all good. But thanks again for having me. I love our conversation. So
yeah,
thank
me too. I'll be in touch. And thanks again, Amy Kay.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed another conversation with Amy Kay Hutchins. I hope you will agree. She is fabulous. She brings great energy to the conversation. She's extremely thoughtful. She's got amazing practical knowledge. She's engaged with a lot of different people. And you know what? She just doesn't take herself too serious, which means that she's sincere in her approach. And I just can't appreciate that enough about her. So some wonderful lessons. I think clearly understanding that we are defined by the conversations that we have is critical. I was taking copious notes on this conversation and think that if you're a salesperson, this resonates. If you're a manager, it resonates. If you're a father, mother, it resonates. And she talked a lot about patience and finding the opportune moments. And she reminded us that, you know, when you're dealing with clients, we're not the hero. It's the customer that is the hero. So She's just got some really, really wonderful thoughts. I hope you guys will all make sure that you go to amyk.com/ppc.com and check it out. I think she's got a lot of really, really cool stuff to share, and I think this Power of Profitable Conversations is going to resonate with you forever. I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to also remind you that this podcast was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for your custom content needs, and I hope you'll listen again. It's been really, really wonderful producing this podcast for you guys, and I'm usually the lucky recipient of all these great conversations. So I hope they're resonating with you as well. Until the next time, remember, be the buffalo, and thanks so much for listening.